Welcome to our Michiana Adventist Forum meeting. Glad that some of you chose to pass up the approach of spring and come here and be with us. I think you'll find it a fascinating program today by Michael Schofield. It's entitled Adventist Higher Education in the U.S. Which school will fail next? Those of you who are here for Sabbath school class, know that we're in for a really great presentation. We had a wonderful discussion this morning. And following the discussion, the presentation, why Gary Gray will be leading a Q&A session. And I just might mention that our speaker today is the Gary Gray of the San Diego Forum. He coordinates the question and answer session out there each month. So a little tie in there. And I say, actually, we got sort of on to this presentation because the San Diego group had him make a similar presentation a while back, and it looked interesting. And I emailed him, and he sent me some slides. And anyway, it all worked out, so we're really glad to have you here today. As we begin, Madeline Johnson is going to offer a word of prayer for us.
Our Father in Heaven, we thank you for bringing us together this afternoon. We also thank you for giving us such a beautiful spring afternoon. And we thank you for bringing our speaker to us and for giving him the unique skills to present this topic to us. We pray that you will guide our discussion this afternoon, and may we all leave here understanding our educational system better and being better prepared to work within it and help it. In Jesus' name, amen.
Well, again, I'd like to thank those of you who in supporting the forum financially, and just pulled up the little envelopes that are back there. If any of you are inspired to take one and send in a check, why, that would be greatly appreciated. As usual, we have some sign-up sheets there for email. If any of you aren't on the list and would like to be getting notices of the meetings, just add your name and email address, and we'll add you to the file. One thing that we'd like to mention, that we're fortunate this year that the National Forum Conference is going to be held in Chicago. Seems like that they're usually far away from us here in Michigan, but it is in the first weekend in September, September 2 to 4, over in Chicago. The title is Genesis and Beyond, Celebrating Faith in a Polarized Age. Seem to be getting more polarized each day here. But there's a great lineup of presenters. John Walton, who we had here a couple of months ago talking to our group from Wheaton College, is going to be there. Chris Blake, Brian Bull, Fritz Guy, and Richard Rice. So I think there's little doubt that it will be a stimulating session. So you may want to start planning for that. Well, again, our title today is Adventist Education in the U.S., Which School Will Fail Next? Michael Schofield is with us from California. He's a man of many talents, and many jobs, many functions, and many interests. He is an adjunct professor at Loma Linda in the area of health information management. A lot of his professional career has been spent in various kind of financial services organizations. Right now he's with ADP, which is, the largest payroll management organization in the country. And he does various sort of database architecture, data quality sort of functions. But he's had a lot of other interests. He's done consulting for various church entities. And he has, as I mentioned, been active in the Adventist Forum. One little footnote, if any of you happen to be fans of the Prison Break series, you know, there's a Michael Schofield who's the hero in there, and this is not the Michael Schofield that we have with us today. So if any of you are here for that reason, sorry. But one thing, you know, sometimes, you know, in this internet day, age, why, you know, particularly for professionals who, you know, get referral business, You know, if you get a bad reputation on the internet, well, it can really be devastating. Well, I think that Michael is safe from that, because if you try to look him up on the internet, you have to get down to about page 18 or something to get past all of the other Michael Schofields before you find out anything about him. So if there is anything bad out there about you, nobody's going to find it. I think I better just say, we're really glad to have you. Now I'll turn the time over to you before we do any more damage.
I have never had an introduction like that. This is afternoon, right? Good. I had a fancy introduction about Loma Linda University, but I'll just skip that and get to the heavy stuff. I want to spend the first 15 minutes taking you back to what Adventism was like 110 years ago, because that is the environment of the roots of Adventist education. So I want to you to imagine a church that is growing fast, quickly. It needs teachers, it needs ministers, and it needs to train them. And I'll use the word train and not educate. You understand there's a subtle difference. And so they need to locate, they need to build a college. They need to create and establish a college. And they look for land. And the land is cheaper out in the country. Okay? So they get some farmland. And this story is repeated over and over. And we're going to build a school here. What do you do first? You don't have enough money. We lay out some foundations of where we're going to go, maybe some streets, and then we build an administration building. And in the basement is a cafeteria. This is how you do things, right? Okay. And then we need a place for the students to stay, so we build the girls' dorm first, right? And we put the guys in tents. This is true. This is true. And then, what's the next building we put up? The church. There's a certain sequence to things we do here. And then some faculty homes. And then the boys' dorm, right? And then the power plant. Each school has in their history, has the date that they got electricity. Big deal. Okay? And then a gymnasium for the Saturday night marches. Right? Okay. And what was next? A science building, and then the press and bindery. Okay. And some apartments for the unmarried faculty. Their problems. Okay. And what did we build next? The furniture plant. So we have campus industries. And finally, a brand new cafeteria. Now, about this time, we sent some of the faculty off to the secular schools to get higher education. Okay? And they brought back secular influences so that we got into intramural sports. Okay? And one thing led to another, and we put in a stadium. Just kidding. You know, with PowerPoint, I could do it, so I did it. That business about students sleeping in tents is true. There are four schools, Pacific Union College, Walla Walla, Columbia Union College, and Southern. for at Southern, I believe it was two winters that the boys slept in tents. I say that because that is a measure of the dedication to the whole concept of Adventist education, that people would go through these sacrifices. So the business model back then was a rural location. We would never put a college downtown, right? It's always a rural location with a well-bounded campus, with a full-time resident students and full-time faculty, all Adventist members, isolated and pure. No radios, no student-owned cars. Okay, that's the ideal. We would not deliberately locate a campus downtown. This is the business school at Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, and I know because I did some lectures there. Definitely urban, right downtown. Parking's expensive, but there's no dorms. So here's a little timeline of the schools as they were founded and as they awarded their first bachelor's degree. So almost all the schools started out as academies before they grew up to be colleges, okay? And here is the faculty portrait of Healdsburg College in 1889. Professor Granger has a Napoleonic complex. But I want to show you the students of the graduating class of 1903 at Healdsburg College. I want you to look at those faces. No, I'm serious. All of these students, many of them were told, I bet, not to marry, because the end is near, right? And they're all dead. We're looking at the faces of students that lived to a ripe old age and passed away, and Jesus did not come. So here's a section of the Healdsburg College handbook. It was kind of oppressive. Here's the Walla Walla class of 1906, hygienic dressmaking. Okay. Here is an obviously staged photograph of some of the youth leaders going through, what is it? The youth instructor, okay, sitting out there. This is Rochelle Filman's class in 1909. Some of you know her? Knew her? Know of her? She married Kilgore. Right. Yeah. Look at the age variance of her class. So this was a small school. We're probably seeing everyone in the school in this photo. Okay, 1909. They cut lumber from the woods back behind SMC, and I have trouble using any other words but SMC. You don't change names of schools without consulting me. Here's a Christian salesmanship class at 1927. They're going out to be call porters. This is the event of the president of SMC leaving to go up to Columbia Union College, and the entire campus walked him down to the train station. Okay? This is a big deal. H.H. Hamilton went up to be president of Columbia Union College. We don't do this today. We don't gather in baggage claim at O'Hare. You know. So there was, there he is getting on the train. So there was a community, sense of community, which we're slowly losing, okay? But it was a small community, basically 199 Academy students. Here's the Missionary Volunteer Society up at PUC in 1938. The student evangelists with their posters ready to go out and to Napa County and Mendocino County and hold efforts. Am I using the language correctly? Okay. Before they did, they were taught how to lead the singing. Okay. Almost every school has a map like this of where alumni are. They may have strings on it. Okay. And that's we'll get back to what the alumni do, because that becomes terribly important in our discussion. I have trouble with a plural of sanitariums. It should be sanitaria. But these were the sanitariums in 1915. Some of them folded. It's a little bit different in 1940. Okay. My mother went to AUC. She was valedictorian of her class. She reminded me repeatedly as I was struggling through academy. She was a school nurse, first aid teacher, pianist, prayer band leader, Sabbath school teacher, and valedictorian. This was AUC class of, looks like, 42. Okay. The old campus model was a concrete image. A campus did not exist if there wasn't a building or buildings. And it still influences the way administrators and particularly trustees today think about education. And it constrains the business model. So I'm going to talk today about Adventist schools, but I'm not going to talk about the GC-anchored schools because they have a different business model, a different market, and different funding. I'm going to be talking mostly about more regional schools. The challenges of this topic is, besides being broad and complex, in fact, so complex that some trustees never get their brain around it, okay? And what they do is to revert to simpler business models and cognitive models of thinking about the questions that come up to them in the school. In preparing this for San Diego a year and a half ago, I talked to a lot of people to get feedback. These are some of the people I was privileged, including Robert Brown. We talked about him at lunch, who was president of Union College and just moved back. He was in the villa at Loma Linda and he just moved back to West Virginia. Richard Osborne had a paper he wrote, well, it looks like 3 years ago now, called Facing Our Challenges, where he very skillfully looks at all the quantitative metrics of higher education and the issues that I'll just touch on some of those. It's probably available, if not from him, Dick Osborne is now at Western Association of Schools and Colleges. You can get it from him. There are ambiguous terms that kind of muck up our discussion. What do we mean by enrollment? And I struggled with that because the General Conference Statistical Office sometimes changes its definitions over time. When you're doing time series analysis, you want consistent definitions. Or what do we mean by faculty? The vast majority of faculty at Loma Linda do not work for the university, they're adjunct. So, and what do we mean by Christian education? Are we talking about our colleges, or do we include Point Loma and Cal Baptist and Cal Lutheran? Are they not Christian? Or Notre Dame, Loyola, are they not Christian? Obviously, UCLA, Stanford, Harvard are not Christian in the sense that we think of it. So we have Adventist and secular. That is our taxonomy, or our traditional taxonomy of schools. And college versus university, I won't go there. And what do we mean by youth? And is our model and our rhetoric about youth, do we recognize maturation, social and religious maturation over time? It would change how we make some decisions. Our planning horizon, is it explicit or culturally intuitive? I've seen in Adventist institutions a progression of permanence. Before, accreditation was not necessary, now it is. We went from wooden buildings to stone to steel frame. And so we have an institutional planning horizon, which sometimes is at odds with our original theological planning horizon, the imminence of the second coming. We are investing in faculty doctorates and in education in general. We don't use this expression anymore, if time should last. I get a laugh if I do use it, but and I shouldn't be totally humorous, although it's tempting. What has happened since 1925 in the environment of education? First is accreditation. That influences what we do tremendously. It influences how we spend our money. There's a minimum wage and expectations of compensation. We see faculty getting more faculty getting doctorates. In fact, it is generally the expectation of tenure now. We had the GI Bill that gave us some revenue streams in terms of tuition. We now have radio and TV and all kinds of electronic means of communicating. Cheaper airfare is probably one of the most significant factors in the Adventist world, because now every school is a competitor with everyone else in North America. Okay, what I'm seeing, and we discussed this with a few people, is Californians will send their kids to SMC, but Tennessee people will not send their kids to La Sierra. Okay, and you can kind of see the difference. We have the advent of the personal computer, funded research, which changes the character of education and what we expect of faculty. Web and fiber and Wi-Fi. We have new web-based resources for research. We have distance learning, and this is rapidly emerging thing. At La Sierra, the College of Arts and Sciences doesn't do it, but education does. And Loma Linda is embracing distance learning vigorously. I like eye contact, you know, when I teach. We have more generous weekend leave for students. What happens around here? Does the campus empty out, or are the dorm students required to? What do they have here? Are the dorm students able to leave every weekend if they want? That's my question.
I think they're able to, but they don't.
They don't. You're still somewhat isolated. Yeah. I mean, geographically.
Well, probably also influenced by international.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, before I forget it. That is a concern I have about Loma Linda, is because side by side in the classroom, we have kids from rich American homes, and we have international students who are just struggling to get by. And I sense that disparity keenly. And something about it to me isn't fair, but that's just the way it is. Finally, we have laptops in the classroom. I sat in on a business law class at La Sierra, and I sat in the back of the room. So half the students had laptops open. Half of those laptops were on Wi-Fi looking at a basketball game. W.W. Prescott would not put up with that. Okay? So there is a challenge and I hear from fellow faculty in the School of Allied Health that the students are coming less motivated, poor basic skills, particularly writing skills. And my favorite question that I get is, will this be on the final? Okay, do you ever hear that? So lots of change to the education model. The business model back in 1905 was there was no competitive threat from any other Adventist school. And if you go to the state university, you're disloyal to the church. You don't compare, so we don't compete with peer Adventist schools because they're too far away and transportation is difficult. The quality of facilities instructions was not a competitive factor back then. It was, you were fiercely loyal to your faith and to your school. The business model has changed enormously. The old assumptions about non-competitive market are obsolete, and the concepts of mission and constituency and strategy have to be rethought. So in a sense, the traditional blueprint is obsolete. Early planning or early higher education in Adventism had a short planning horizon, primitive facilities, frugal. Boy, were we frugal when I was in academy. You know, have a bake sale just to buy an overhead projector. Does anybody share that experience? Strong and heroic devotion to the cause. Emphasis on entering the work and lots of sacrifice. Severely restricting student behavior and men only in administration. Okay? And a ministerial dominance of boards. The BMW effect that I see at Loma Linda, you just drive through, is your parking lot have pretty good cars in it, in the student parking lot? Yeah, okay, same thing. So one of the issues is to be able to differentiate between process and outcomes. And actually, Dr. Beardsley was starting to talk about this before she left Loma Linda, that there's more interest in accreditation discussion in process and output. So the blueprint tends to talk about techniques, a little bit about goals, a lot about rules, but we should be talking about the outcomes too. What do we want the students to leave with? Obviously, we want them to carry with them the faith-based beliefs and values, and to develop in faith social relations. We also want them to feel a spirit of altruism and service, not necessarily that they have to work for the denomination. We want to give them professional competencies. We want to give them social competencies. I'm a big believer still in a liberal arts curriculum as part of that. We want them to be institutionally loyal. One of the problems that the fundraisers tell me is Adventist versus non-Adventist graduates, the Adventists will donate back to the institution more than the non-Adventists. Okay. We would like them to be good citizens and exercise critical thinking. We got to do all this within budget and do no harm. Okay? Which means we don't want to alienate them. We were better at alienating students 40 years ago than we are now. So there's hope. Can we achieve all these goals? And the goals were independent of process. So can we achieve these goals with more modern techniques? Can they be achieved through distance learning, through social networking techniques, and things like that? And so part of the big decisions that colleges have to make now is, what is their market? What kind of market segmentation are we going to do? Back, this is PUC, 1957. About 55% of their reporting graduates found employment outside the denomination. The rest, which would be 43%, were denominational workers in the U.S. or in the mission field. That looks like 10% in the mission field. That's a big number compared to today. So that was one part of the goal, the outcomes that we wanted to see. While the General Conference Statistical Office was tracking percentage of graduates with denominational employed, we had these figures. I couldn't find them for every year, but the general trend has been downward. No surprise. The brick and mortar institutional model has been what we have about all of our institutions, even a media center. The only exception to that brick and mortar model was Griggs University. If there isn't a campus we can see and touch, it doesn't exist. We have to have something to photograph. And this is a very common view. So there's no cognitive provision in our traditional view of Adventist education for virtual organizations. And whereas virtual organizations are becoming very successful, eBay and others. And now virtual schools are competing with us. And in fact, they're proliferating. Some of you know Malin Plutzy. He's starting a school, a virtual school. He just retired. He was my boss for a while at Loma Linda. What are we showing here? This is the enrollment for the schools ranked by the size of the school, Loma Linda being up over 4,000 now, and down to Canadian Union College. Let's look at the environment outside of Adventism that we have to compete in today. First, looking at wealth. The primary market that we're talking about is the U.S. population. The U.S. citizenry are richer in real terms. They're an educated workforce, technology-driven economy. We're still, and this is another issue, but we're still working with a lower, underpriced energy model, and we have lower costs of imported goods. So the national income for the United States has increased significantly. Well, that's due to three things: population growth, dollar devaluation, and gain in productivity. So if we normalize out the population growth and the rate of inflation, the U.S. citizens are still much richer over time. And this represents productivity gains. So they can buy about six times as much as they could, the average citizen or family can buy six times as much as they could, six times as they could in the depths of the Depression. Adventists generally are richer, but not so much. We'll get to that in a second. The U.S. is becoming better educated. The percentage of population that are high school graduates has gone up from 75% to 84% just in the past 18 years. The rising percentage of college graduates gone from 20% to 27% in that same 18 years. So lots of a bias towards college education in America. The NAD enrollment in colleges and universities has gone from 3,700 in 19 during the war up to 24,000. We haven't normalized this data yet. This chart is inherently deceiving because the membership of the NAD over that same period of time has gone from 100,000 to a million. So if we divide the enrollment of college enrollment by membership, we see that it peaked out in 1969 and then had a steady decline till 1990 and has been flat, pretty much flat since then. So if we assume that the demographic of families and college eligible children growing up in Adventism, we are not getting them into the Adventist system. Okay? So that's a 40% decline in the propensity of students to choose Adventist higher education. From that to that, I don't think you'll see this picture on the cover of the review. Okay? Adventists are, on the average, poorer. This is because of changing demographics. I remember when the Southern California Conference was awash in tithe money, and they assigned two ministers to every church, no matter how small. Now they're districting, and there's multiple churches to a minister. I think Culver City is in a district and a few others, even in the LA metro area. So how I calculated this, if there's an economist that wants to challenge me, is I took the tithe per member and compared it against a per capita income. And that's how I arrived at this. So that is a significant decline in the wealth of the average Adventist who have the potential of sending their children to an Adventist school. On the average, NAD membership is poorer. College enrollment is more popular in the US. When we look at NAD college enrollment per 1,000 members, I don't know why I marked 1980. What happened in 1980? Let me go back to that. Nope. I forget why I marked that. Maybe it'll show up on the next slide. A big factor is that private four-year college tuition has gone up significantly since 1960. This is adjusted for inflation. So what used to cost $6,000 now costs $24,000. Okay. Similar but not so severe for board, for a dorm room. Average cost in the United States, this is from the U.S. Department of Education. So the total mix of room, dorm, food, and tuition for a four-year college, this is annual expenditure, has tripled, just about tripled, since 1975. Now, it varies, of course, by school. Bowdoin, who's from Brunswick, Maine? Bowdoin College is more expensive than Harvard. Harvard at $33,000, the U.S. average at $28,000 per year, just for tuition. Loma Linda for undergraduate in allied health is about $24,000. What's really a bargain is AUC at $14,000. Or Southern at $16,000. Okay? Bert Connell, chair of the Department of Nutrition, said, why don't you express that in something that we can relate to, how affordable it is. And so I took the U.S. minimum wage, and I divided the minimum wage by the tuition to figure out how many hours and how many weeks. Boy, you're going to worry me if I do something wrong here. How many weeks you have to work at minimum wage, assuming no tax and you don't eat, to afford the tuition. And the tear-jerking scenario, I say, is some Hispanic single mom who's working as a janitor and trying to put her boy through school. Back in 1970, it was 28 weeks. It is now 2.5 years. Any trustee that says, I earned my way through school and so can you. They're not looking at this data, okay? By the way, if you have questions of clarification, feel free to throw them up at me. La Sierra tuition was a little bit below the national average, but they're working hard to catch up. Except for one thing. This is posted tuition. It is not effective tuition because we've been discounted. I don't know if this school discounts. La Sierra discounts severely. And I think there's enormous danger in discounting because any two passengers on an airplane who compare prices, one is not going to be happy. Okay? So discounting is going to be a problem. As a share of median household income. If you, college tuition, four-year tuition, room and board, the whole ball of wax, used to be 33% of median household income in America, before tax. Now it's 75%. If they pay tax, they don't eat, or heat the house. So it is less affordable. The impact of this affordability, declining affordability, is first of all, students opt for state-funded universities. Those who attend Adventist schools incur staggering debt, and that debt burden causes them career choices often outside of the denominational system. Does that make sense? Okay. So, then we have another issue, and that is the volatility of enrollment and an enrollment being the primary funding source for the school. Enrollment volatility prevents rational planning. We'll look at some examples here. This all came from the data from the GC statistical office. I don't know, maybe somebody here on this campus for a dissertation has done this kind of plot, but I've never seen it before, and nobody I've talked to has ever seen it before. This was PUC. They spiked up to 2,400 students in 1977. Over a period of 9 years, they lost 40% of their enrollment, which means 40% of their revenue. How do you do capital planning? How do you plan your faculty when that's going on? Okay. PUC's average faculty, you can hire faculty, but you can't do the reverse, right? So this shows the tuition and the faculty numbers through 70s and 80s for PUC. And down at the bottom, I show the student to faculty ratio, which started at 14.5 and then dropped to 8. Okay, that's a severe decline. That endangers the viability of the school. Southern took a hit in 1980, and they experienced a 30% loss over about an 8-year period. So that's irrelevant, but I shouldn't do that. I shouldn't do that. Okay. I'll skip this. Well, President Thomas Walters brought in to tighten things up, imposed draconian rules on the students, such as dorm passes to go to the library in the evening, and all kinds of things. He lasted only 3 years. Okay. We've looked at Southern. Southern's share of the liberal arts enrollment in the NAD declined, but now it's up to 19%, which is larger than it's ever been. So Southern's doing very well. Walla Walla saw a decline, and then they saw a spike for a couple years, and then declined again. You can't do planning with that kind of volatility. Columbia Union College saw 85% growth over 2 years. Ouch. I mean, it's good, but you tax your facilities as well as any clinical activities. AUC has the same enrollment now it had in 1946. Okay. What is different is the base cost of running a school. And we'll talk about that in a second. Kettering has been doing very well. So is Florida Hospital. So, what's the primary feeder system to our colleges? The academies. But we see declining enrollment. These are academies that have closed over the past 30, 40 years. But we've closed seminaries too. Did you know that there were all these seminaries in America? Some 80 years ago, but we closed them. Okay? This is the academy enrollment in real numbers in the North American division. Peaked out at 20,000, it's down to 13,000 now. Significant decline. This is your feeder system. Okay? If we divide that by the number of members, it looks even worse. From 43 students per 1,000 members down to 12. This is your feeder system. And it's the decline is across all union conferences. It isn't just one union conference. It's across all of them. The demographic changes in America, in American Adventism, result in less tithe and other income for the conferences, which undermines their ability to subsidize Adventist education. As I mentioned, the Southern California Conference in Los Angeles, from multi-pastor churches to multi-church pastors. Southern California Conference has shown significant decline. Back in the golden age of CME graduates settling around Los Angeles and Glendale, the tithe per member of Southern California Conference was 43% higher than the national average. Now it's 26% lower. Okay? Am I doing things right so far? Now that little spike, this upturn, is not increase in tithe. It's purging the books and lowering the denominator. Okay? There is a certain incentive because of insurance reasons to purge the books of non-affluent members. And that's a whole interesting issue. The Southeastern California Conference sees a similar decline, not as severe. Well, who cares about the success in the future of the school? Well, we have to recognize all the constituencies, the stakeholders. Obviously, the legal constituency, the prospective students and families have a stake in it, the donors, and the alumni, an overlapping group, but not totally overlapping. The geographic community, believe it or not, has an interest, as well as the economic community, and that is the vendors, the people who sell things to the school, have an interest in the survival. There's an emotional community, my school. Okay? Even if I never went there, it's my school. Your prospective employers have an interest in the quality of graduates that come out. And the government takes an interest in the survival or the quality of what we do with education. So there are lots of constituencies, and not all their goals are the same. Oh yes, there's faculty and staff that want to see the survival of the school. And I'm ignoring theological splits right now. I'm just talking about different interests of the constituencies. So how do we get into the situation we're in today? First is a higher base minimum cost to run a school. Secular universities are accommodating religion. We've heard the stories 40 years ago of how tough it was to be a Christian and an Adventist in a secular university. I would say now, because of various laws, it's not difficult at all. When I had to take a final on a Friday morning at UCLA by special arrangement, so I wouldn't be taking it on Friday evening. And they accommodated me, okay? The NAD demographics is shifting. We aren't a rich farmer merchant class anymore. I'm seeing lower entry skills, program proliferation. We'll talk about each of these individually. School fragmentation, enrollment volatility, we looked at that. Some theological diversity may contribute to this. There's a tremendous amount of nostalgia in the cognitive process of making decisions about the school, and there's the union conference silos. So the demands of accreditation, information technology cost more. The baseline, the fixed costs of running a school are much greater than they were 40, 50 years ago. There's greater government reporting requirements, so we have to have an Office of Institutional Research. We have much more vigorous advancement in fundraising. And recruiting, it becomes very competitive. And then we have to do, and I love this term, we don't say remedial anymore because we don't want to hurt feelings. We say pre-foundational. Bonehead math in English, okay? The high schools didn't do the job. Case study of La Sierra, when I was a student there, there were three people in recruiting and admissions. There was a registrar, there were a couple people in finance and cashier. Student health had 1.5 people, and public relations had 1.5 headcount. Today, there are 11 people, 11 full-time recruiters at La Sierra. I don't know how many people are back out of sight in the accounting office. Three in public relations, 9 in advancement, that's a profit center, plus Center for Student Academic Success, Honors Program, Office of Institutional Research, Disability Services, Service Learning, and a whole office devoted to international students, which is not a bad thing. PUC, just the IT staff in 2006 was 14 people. So we have raised the baseline that you have, the minimum that you have to have to run a school, which argues for consolidation, but we're not going to go there too much today. Secular universities accommodate religion. I gave my anecdote. So after comparing costs in public schools and community colleges and state universities become a more attractive option. The other thing is, even expensive schools are attractive. These are the schools that my friends and acquaintances in Adventist ministry, education, and leadership sent their kids to these schools. No, the kids chose the schools. Okay? All those schools, instead of going to the Adventist school. So, why did they make that decision? Their perception of quality, very likely. And they had the money. Okay? The demographics I've talked about, more members and more students are coming from lower income groups in America. Fewer membership households are the classic nuclear families. Single parent households find college expenses more difficult. That should be obvious. Lower entry skills, deficiencies in math, writing, and study skills. And it's a national phenomenon. It's not just Adventists. But these place burdens on the colleges to bring these students back up to speed. If I could cross-tabulate two phenomena, the academic potential and these current math skills, you may have a situation, and some people at La Sierra are talking about taking the students in the lower right quadrant, that is, low skills but high potential, and giving them discounts, putting them through remedial, and getting them mainstreamed into college education. Now that's a laudable goal, but it has a cost. So we're constantly going to be balancing benefits against cost. The faculty lament lower skills, where I've talked about that, and the work ethic, so I'm kind of talking ahead of my slides here. I see program proliferation. It is in the academic DNA to want to offer another master's degree. That doesn't happen here, does it? Okay. Well, that's costly. Especially where there are not jobs and when the student graduates. And there's a New York Times op-ed about the end of the university as we know it. We have a moral obligation to be realistic when counseling a student as to what the job market is at the far end. I love being in Allied Health because every one of our students has multiple offers. Okay, how am I doing for time? Okay.
Good.
And I've argued with Dr. Beardsley about this. I have to call her Dr. Beardsley and not Lisa. I say there's a decision tree or a decision rule that we can go through about do we embark in a major of a particular kind? And there's two dimensions to this. The capital investment it requires to do the major well, be successful at it, and how much of that major, its unique content, is unique to Adventism, okay? And that is a significant factor, I think. Obviously, religion and education, Adventism makes a difference. So we do it, and we don't flinch, but it's a low capital investment. Math, history, and English is not terribly different in an Adventist school, other than the character of the interaction with the student and the teachers. But the content isn't terribly different. Biology, Adventism does or should make a difference. Modern languages, no. Medicine, dentistry, all the allied health, high capital investment, but we do it because our faith makes a difference in the content and the kinds of people that go out. Somewhere in the middle, I'll put social work and psychology and all that. Physics and chemistry is kind of religion neutral. Theater arts and opera, high investment, low uniqueness. Probably would not vote to put in an opera program anywhere, okay? terribly expensive to do, and it's not terribly unique. So that's one set. If I were on a, if I were a trustee, that's a set of decision rules that I would apply. Okay. Oh, and pharmacy and industrial arts. Now, on the edge of this, Loma Linda is embarking on a criminal justice program. How, you know, maybe at the Q&A we can wrestle with that. Is that going to be uniquely Adventist, and is it something we should consume resources? So, the evaluation criteria for a new program, I think, what's the general market? Is it sustainable? What's the institutional need for this skill? Is it sustainable? What's the competition? Who's already doing it? Are there enough students to reach the break-even point? I'm a big advocate of financial models to say, what are the real costs, the total real costs, and the break-even point? Now, when you're doing those models, by the way, there's an interaction between programs. Charles Bell, who was academic vice president of PUC, told me, who was also my oboe teacher, told me about the boyfriend effect. They run the nursing program in part, they justify it, because for every young woman who comes to take nursing, about half of them bring boyfriends with them. Revenue. Okay? So it's good that they recognize that, and they should, if we quantify the model, we should build that into the model. So are there enough students to break even? What portion of the students will be Adventist? That's a big question. Loma Linda's down to 46% Adventist, school-wide. Some schools, it's medicine, it's higher. Pharmacy, it's much lower. I taught one class where there was a woman there who described herself as a secular Muslim. And I'm, what does that mean? I gotta unpack that. What is a secular Muslim? Well, we have a lot of Muslims and a lot of Catholics and Baptists at Loma Linda. Maybe you do too. What portion of graduates will actually go to church institutions? Can you find the qualified teachers, and what percent do you want to be Adventist? Can you sustain your program for a long term? And the dean of the business school at Loma Linda said to me, what happens if we don't do it? That's a good question to ask in processing this decision. Do we embark on a new program? I'm tired of teaching classes with just 3 students in them. I want a bigger class if I'm going to go in and teach. Okay? There's fragmentation. I don't know what you have here, but every school has to have its own computer lab. Schools don't share well. I don't know what you have here. But we have a lot of redundant capital investment, and I don't think that's good. Let's see, enrollment volatility, we talked about that. Good capital planning requires stability for buildings and classrooms, for hiring faculty. Faculty levels are flexible upward but inflexible downward. That comes from economics. Applies here. We talked about the orthodoxy. Broadening, this is going to create stress for a lot of schools. It's already creating stress for La Sierra. There's a natural and inescapable tension between the broad ranges of ideas in a liberal arts education and the literal interpretation of scripture and the denomination's midrash, if I may borrow a Jewish term, of truth and standards. So, for example, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but let's start with literature. I see a kind of a dichotomy between the two extremes, and there's tension there, particularly among some of your constituents, and of course the origins of life. There's tension there. I'm not going to go down that road because it's really gnarly. That's a California term. There, I see an anti-education sentiment in Adventism. Training, yes. Education, no. The only literature you need is the Bible and the writings of Sister White. Have you ever heard that? Okay. So people want primitive religion, but they don't want primitive dentistry. tremendous amount of nostalgia in decision making, even collective decision making. Any college that builds a brand new building, it's immediately guaranteed 10 years more life because nobody's going to want to close it down after you just built a building and named it after a major donor. Okay? And of course, there's the Union Conference silos, and they're still silos. And that's a major impediment to closing any colleges. My recommendations, a better or more specific mission statement for every college. Think in terms of outcomes rather than processes. Examine your funding options. More aggressive and clever yield management. An improved board of trustees. That's delicate. Higher asset utilization. Which distance learning is better utilization of your assets, okay? If you're offering distance learning. And reevaluate some of the traditional historic drivers. Create mission statements and scope statements. What we're gonna do and what we're not gonna do. What we're going to attempt to cover and what we're not. They should name specific constituencies and markets and audiences that will and will not be served. So again, shifting from processes to outcomes. We want students to stay in the church, find their marriage partners in the church, be inclined to work for the denomination, acquire professional competencies. Can we do this without a church school system? You gotta keep asking that. So in a way, I'm making your life uncomfortable. I'm asking you to justify your institution. Can we accomplish that? Or maybe for some of the students we can, but not for all of the students. The traditional sources of funding have been 99 or 95% tuition, subsidies and donations, research grants, federal special grants, earnings on endowments. Endowment is a new concept to us. It's a long-term thinking issue. It requires discipline. Save the money rather than spending it right away. This is last year's funds flow for 2 years ago. The number of students they had times the tuition would have yielded $31 million, but they discounted that $8 million. Does that take your breath away? So the net tuition income revenue was only $22 million. That came from family sources and external scholarships and grants. They got a subsidy of $3.3 million from the Pacific Union College, so they had a total of $26 million in cash to spend on instructional and academic support, student services, and overhead. Ouch. Okay. So this discounting business scares me terribly. How do you mitigate enrollment volatility? Yield management, just like an airline. Grow your non-tuition revenue sources if you can. Establish enrollment as a smaller percentage of applications. Oh my. Generate lots of applications, be selective, and then vary your dip into the marginal applications. So you're controlling what's coming in the door. Let's, I want to get to the next slide here. You maximize applications, you select the best, encourage them to show up, and it's very similar to overbooking a flight. You're kind of gaming the system a little bit. The risk of yield management is that you will miss your revenue goal. This wasn't done 30 years ago, and let's look at how it would work. MIT gets 13,000 applicants. They accept 11% of them, and only 65% of those show up. Now, you want them to show up, right? Walla Walla accepted 98% of its graduates, and 71% showed up. Okay. Point Loma, Nazarene, accepted 75% of its graduates, but only 42% showed up. That's scary. You need to plan. You're doing planning. And all of a sudden, once you accept them, it's their decision whether they come. That's scary. What's this? Yale accepted 8%, but 68% showed up. Union College, this number amazes me, accepted 45%. What are they doing? But 51% showed up. We're talking freshmen, not transfers, first-year freshmen. Pacific Union College accepted 77%, but only 25 showed up. That's scary. Okay. So there are two dimensions, selectivity versus inclusiveness, and the yield, how many show up. High show, low show, hard to get into, easy to get into. Did I do that right? Yeah. Let's see. Walla Walla is easy to get into, and most of them show up. PUC is relatively easy to get into, but they don't show up. Harvard, Stanford, MIT, Caltech, up in the upper left quadrant here. Okay. So we have to recognize that we're in a very complex system with flows of students between Adventist academies and non-Adventist academies. So we want to find those students that didn't go to an academy but still would come to an Adventist college. How do you find them? That's one of the admissions challenges. And maybe we would take students from non-Adventist college to transfer them in, but we could also lose them to non-Adventist college. And then the same thing. So you have all these flows that you ought to be measuring. And you ought to be measuring and what wonderful thing I'm seeing in recruiting for Adventist colleges in North America is there's a lot of camaraderie amongst the recruiters, and they're sharing data, and they're sharing efforts, and I think that's great. In fact, that is profoundly great compared with their union presidents. Okay? So, and then can you get non-Adventist schools? I spoke at a Rotary in Norco over the hill from La Sierra. I just happened to sit at a table with a honor student from a school in Riverside who said she was going to La Sierra. She wasn't an Adventist. And I didn't get the chance, I wanted to ask her, what influenced your decision there? How did you do that? Because I'm interested in that, but I didn't get a chance to talk to her. But La Sierra is attracting non-Adventist students from the community. And that is a new market that we didn't think about 30 years ago, okay? But you are polluting the pool when you bring in non-Adventist students. The school with the lowest percent of Adventist students is Kettering, 9.6. They know their market and they're into it and they're doing very well, okay? After that, Florida. After that, Loma Linda with 46% Adventist. Up to 95% at Southwestern and Keene. So the percent of enrollment that is Adventist has declined. This is a non-zero based chart, by the way, from 56% down to 46%. I'm not worried about that, personally. I love having Nazarene and Baptists in the classroom. It's the brat Adventists that I worry about. The brats, the rich brats driving the Beamers that got legacy admissions because their daddy was a donor. Okay? They're problems. Right? Okay, we're close to the end here. And what kind of faculty mix do you want? Are you going to let in non-Adventist, are you going to attract and hire non-Adventist faculty? La Sierra just started that, and boy, is there heat in the boardroom about that, okay? So, who are the ultimate decision makers? The legal constituency who ratify the trustees, who select and ratify the president, who select and ratify the provost. Who makes these decisions? Are they removed from the reality? Are they paying attention? There are ex officio members of the trustees who are annoyed, but they show up. Are they engaged? Are they, and I'm not in the room, so I don't know. Some of you may know. There are all kinds of informal constituencies we need to recognize. I have a whole talk on core competency for board members. We want them to know all this stuff, don't we? If they're participating in financial and strategic decisions, we want them to know all that. We want them to be at least occasionally looking at the Chronicle of Higher Education, maybe, okay, or a synopsis. We want them to have critical thinking skills. I'll skip that. We want them to have independence and lack of conflict of interest. We want them to have courage and communication skills and understanding and appreciation of our beliefs and a commitment and willingness to serve and some world savviness. Finding all that in one person who was willing to be a trustee is tough, okay? We also need to recognize the collective cognitive, the God talk, the group think, all those issues in a deliberative process. There's a tension between pragmatism and vision and hope. The risk takers versus the cautious. I'm sure God will bless us, but we don't have the money. There's always that tension. Don't you have faith? We're charged with being careful with the Lord's assets. I can jump on both sides of that debate very easily, okay? La Sierra has done a lot to integrate its school with the surrounding community. Every community activist in Riverside knows how to find the room where the meeting is on the La Sierra campus. They have been there enough times. That's good. What do we want to do? To boost enrollment from outside the Adventist Church, actively recruit. Our recruiter at Allied Health goes to all the Baptist, the Lutheran colleges. We're there at their recruiting fairs. I think that's a good thing to do. We talk about asset utilization. In a sense, we need a BRAC, base realignment. You know what a BRAC is. We need someone to decide how many colleges we need in North America, because the union presidents aren't going to solve that problem, okay? We close churches, we close academies, why can't we close a college? I don't work for the church, I can take a risk here, okay? So the choice is to close a school deliberately, carefully, planned, and I would add gracefully, or have it happen suddenly, catastrophically.
One, looking at it from post-World War II, 1970, I think you will find a similar trend. So if you take post-World War II, the present, it's even more problematic.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is the aging population of the North American division versus the number of students that are in high school and elementary school, forget just Adventist schools. That is, I think, another issue. A third issue is the physical plants and the maintenance. There are many of the institutions that could double, triple, and even quadruple the enrollment if you did not have the classes with 3, 6, et cetera, numbers of students. And we continue to increase in physical assets, but with those physical assets, there is a continuing cost of maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you have presented a picture that is very important, but perhaps even more rosy than it really is.
I thought this would be depressing, but and I didn't show you the number of elementary students. Gone down too. The number of elementary schools is declining. They're closing schools, the little rural schools.
Well, if you take a look at our church population, what it is, its distribution, and the age of it, it becomes more evident.
I'm not sure that the age pyramid of the Adventist Church has changed much now from 50 years ago. If you look at, if you're familiar with age, mm-hmm. age pyramid, there's another term for them, but.
Our statistics suggest that we are becoming older.
I don't think we are. I think the main reason for the decline is that the constituency is becoming poorer, and they can't afford the tuition. That's my gut feel, based on the numbers that I looked at. But I could be wrong.
And looking at, it seems like you argue that the constituency is getting poorer. Mm-hmm. And I was curious how you came up with that. It looks like you took so the average tithe per member. Yeah. I was wondering if you threw out the non-tithe paying members, or if you looked at the average wealth of those people, or how, because it seems like one of the arguments about that could be that people just aren't paying as much tithe even though they're just as wealthy. How do you?
Good question. I think, and so there's two factors. One is loyalty, and the other is personal wealth. And in fact, you have people who don't pay any tithe, you have people who pay faithful tithe. I had to do that trend chart. I had to assume that loyalty factor has not changed any. Now, I'm around a lot of liberals, so I sense less loyalty. But every time I go to another church, I'm in a totally different paradigm where there is fierce loyalty to the institutional Adventist church. So I'm out on a limb in making that conclusion. But if you look at the changing demographics of the church, it stands to reason.
How many, and I agree, I think that there is a shift in income. I think, I forget the fellow, the Adventist at Harvard, who spoke at La Sierra conference, pointed out, I forget his name, he pointed out some demographics. Uh-huh. I do think that's the shift. I think there is still an aging lag. But my question is, how many of these contextual problems that you talked about are also being faced by state universities?
By state?
Yeah, what's
state
unique? Okay. What's unique about Adventist higher education that, and what's similar to what's happening to other universities?
A lot of liberal arts colleges, religious or not, are facing the same issues and have the same struggles. Our paradigm is different because we existed at first to feed employees to the institutional church, and they didn't have that. They didn't have that goal.
But some of the economic factors are also affecting public universities. Higher education is expensive for states now.
Yes.
And so that's why your state, California, is ratcheting down massively the number of people that are taking in, which is increasing some of the acceptance rates at some private schools.
Many of Adventist colleges in the last 2 years have seen enrollment go up. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of clear-minded people are saying it's a bubble.
It's a population bubble.
It's a bubble. Not a population bubble, but an economic bubble.
It's the highest number of kids. The freshman class last year and this year are the highest number ever in the history of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not only a baby boomer bubble, but it's a baby boomer bubble with academic
interest.
If they
can't find jobs, they can borrow money.
Yes. So.
La Sierra has seen its largest freshman class in 20 years. It has its largest number of biology majors ever. Literally. Run with that.
This might be not a simple thought, but we spent 16 years in a very small church before retiring here, and most of the people, in fact, my husband and I were some of the few who had ever gone to Adventist colleges and were proud of our educational system. And I don't know that as much the poverty as it is when our parents became Adventists, they bought a whole package, which included sacrifice for Christian education because supposedly we'd be better people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these people had no thought, no interest in sending any child to an Adventist higher education. And they were not all uneducated people coming in. Some of them had good incomes.
By these people, you talk about your more recent experience.
Our more recent experience. So I'm not sure it's all poverty. It's the package that they bought in conversion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
David. This is more a comment than a question, but it impacts on two of the other questions. My understanding that is that church growth in North America is primarily driven by Hispanic immigration, and that keeps the church younger and poorer. But it is true that white membership is aging, and so I think that impacts the pyramid and also the numbers in school.
I wish Monty Salim had pyramids to give us, but I don't think he does that kind of research. I wish he did,
Dennis.
Dennis, there he is. Correct me, but was there a study published back in the 80s summarized in Spectrum, which looked at the income of the Adventist church? If I remember correctly, there was someone in the seminary and someone else, and they looked at the ethnicity of the church, they compared it with the income of our church and the ethnicity in relationship to the American population. And at that particular time, we were lower and lower middle class. And then there was nothing hardly in the middle. And then you had this big group up at the high end as such.
The professionals?
Right. And I, from my experience, I haven't seen that change much. Having taught in public universities, what I have seen is that certain religious organizations have addressed their issue. If you want to go to any big university, you can find a Mormon house.
Yeah.
Okay? They will provide, the church will provide a qualified individual to teach Mormon history and Mormon philosophy to any student at that university who wants to take it and get university credit. And therefore they use the Mormon students who are there as the draw. And they're booming, okay? It's all the way through this way. And I wonder if somehow, as students are now being attracted, because you can go to all the community colleges around here, including IUSB, et cetera, and you will see Adventist students galore taking classes there, and especially the first 2 years, and then some of them will transfer here.
Which has the potential of keeping them in the church, even though they're not going to the school, which is one of our desired outcomes.
Right.
I think the Jewish population.
There's another one. There's Catholic, you have the Newman Foundation.
Yeah.
You have all of these kinds of things which
I think we are doing something like that in Berkeley.
We're doing that at about 20, 30 campuses.
It's a relatively new thing.
It is new.
20
yeah.
years. Yeah. 20. Things are new after 20 years.
Yeah, you're giving us kind of a great snapshot of kind of where things stand now, and given a few ideas of what we can do in the future. I'm wondering, has it been discussed as we look historically what a lot of Christian schools have done? Yale, Harvard, USC, 1950s, moving away from the Methodist denomination, breaking ties with that. It was a Baptist school, I think in Atlanta, medical school that has recently separated itself from. It has pulled away from its ties, its original ties. And as we look across here, coming up with accreditation next year, that whole creation issue, not to dwell on that. Has there been any discussion of, in order to survive and to get a good student base to run a school, a competitive school, that, is there a concern at all that maybe we might lose some of our distinctiveness as an Adventist school and become more liberal to the point
where I'm not in the midst of those kinds of discussions. I've had them informally with people, and I think I did say I'm comfortable with Loma Linda finding its critical mass by including non-Adventist Christians. I'm comfortable with that. Some people are not. Now, one model is that Loma Linda becomes completely non-dependent on the General Conference. The General Conference is helping with that model. I think that's a bad idea, but if it happens, I think Loma Linda will steer its own course. The most powerful political group there is the School of Medicine and the faculty and the alumni. It's kind of the tail that wags the dog. That's a financial engine. They're doing very well, and they will continue to do well. So, would Loma Linda completely sever itself from Adventist control? I don't think the GC would let that happen for emotional reasons as well as pragmatic. But it's an interesting thing to speculate about. Very different Loma Linda from here. Very different, yeah.
Avondale College in Australia has 40% non-Adventist students. Samyukta University in Korea has more than 75% non-Adventist students. So overseas, that kind of model seems to be farther along than anything we're doing here.
Right.
Have you discovered what leads to success in attracting non-Adventist students to Adventist schools? What would we have to surrender, if anything, to do that?
I don't think we'd have to surrender anything. I think quality and competence is the greatest draw. I'd love to hear someone from Kettering, from Florida, to talk about how their business model works. But they're very successful. And more power to them. I think it's great. Yeah.
Isn't there a certain amount of conservative Adventism who is concerned about too many non-Adventists in a college environment where their kids might go and end up getting attached to a non-Adventist?
Would some of them be in Michigan?
Then are the ones who don't do that, are they tending to get students from those conservatives who are traveling a long ways to get their kids to a less non-Adventist group?
I haven't personally talked to people in that position, but I'm sure they're out there. I think that's part of Southern's success right now. And that's fine. That's fine. I love measuring things, so I would love to have stats on that, but the admissions people don't keep or share stats on the reasons for rejecting or accepting. Maybe they do, and I just haven't seen them. Yeah, David.
You haven't answered the question in your advertised title.
Okay.
No. We know about AUC, but put on your prophetic hat and say the two scenarios. One, we plan the outcome. What's it going to look like in 25, 30 years? And one, we don't plan a solution. What's it going to look like in 25, 30 years?
Yeah. I think CUC is at risk, or if not, what's it now? Don't change names. I think it's at risk. I thought Union was at risk until I visited the campus. They're not at risk. They have a culturally homogeneous constituency that's very loyal. I was astonished at Union. I think PUC is at risk for an interesting reason, that education can't be done in isolation of the rest of the economy. And if you are entering technical disciplines where an internship with your discipline, industry in your discipline, would be advantageous, PUC is too isolated. That's where La Sierra has an advantage. There's all kinds of industry and opportunity for internships right off the campus. Whereas PUC, unless you're studying vineyards, there's not much much opportunity. And part, one of the things that scares people at Loma Linda is where we're going to find the clinical facilities to expand any health-related program. Loma Linda School of Medicine had the Inland Empire to itself, but now UC Riverside is starting a School of Medicine, and that's going to compete for clinical facilities. So that's interesting. So I see PUC at risk for that reason. Otherwise, emotionally, I think PUC is a wonderful place. But economically, I think it's weaker than Walla Walla in the long term. That's just my guess. I haven't seen the books. But they're trying to sell off land to create an endowment. That's created a stir. I haven't been prophetic, but I've been kind of. Those are some of the factors you may want to take in. And like I said, I thought Union, because of its size, would be a candidate. But once I visited there, whoa, they're doing fine as a small school. As long as they don't try to go into too many different disciplines. Emergency medical?
Physician assistant.
Yeah.
Physician assistant.
Wow.
A big program.
That's doing very well. Surprised me.
They're also an urban area.
Okay. Kind of, yeah.
Sizable urban area. I mean,
the electricity stays on all night. Yes.
We should stop. I'm told we have a growing grape industry here in Southwest Michigan. I'm told those grapes are as good as those
in the Napa Valley.
I emphasize, I'm told.
Yes, we can't do all the research ourselves.
Yes. Well, thank you for your perceptive questions today and all year long. Thank you for your support of the forum. With your attendance.
Thank you for coming.
And just a reminder, there are some envelopes we'd like to contribute to our expenses. We'd appreciate that. And let's thank Brother Michael for his